The first thing that people usually do is touch and feel them to check that they're real, and then once they realise they're real, then they look up and admire and spend a little bit more time. But when we first were installing the project, you could be up on the building and it was amazing just watching everyone stopping to look at the whole thing going up.
Instinctively, I feel better. Lots of people feel better being around greenery, and you can see it. You know, there's a big wall down at Bligh Street. It's the middle of the CBD. On a sunny day, people are just kind of standing there talking to each other, and they'll back up against the wall, and you can see them wanting to get closer to it, and it appears to be completely unconscious.
It definitely brings some nature to the city, and I think that's what everyone likes from this. So I think everyone needs it as well. A bit of open space, a bit of green, a little bit of nature.
Welcome to RN's Off Track. My name's Anne Jones. In the middle of the city, where chewing gum sticks to the pavement, where the buses push bubbles of hot air into you as they go past, it isn't all just concrete and glass. There are gardens taking root all over the walls. In fact, across towns and cities in Australia, more of this stick-to-the-wall garden is appearing, like the patches of green on the Block Tally Show apartment building in Melbourne, and four sides of a cube-like restaurant in Perth, along one of the major motorways in Brisbane, and even the huge rooftop gardens of the Museum of Old and New Art in Hobart. When these gardens are vertical, they're called living walls or green walls, and they're not really new. Think of the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. But their supporters say they purify and cool the air, insulate the buildings, increase biodiversity, and promote psychological well-being. The City of Sydney Council is supporting this type of greening. It has a plan called Sustainable Sydney 2030, and part of the implementation is assessing the green credentials of every available surface on public and private land. A new development in the CBD has the tallest vertical gardens in the world. They're 113 metres high, with plants growing in felt pockets over 30 stories up. But on the other end of the scale, some green walls only measure a couple of metres across, like the one that Lucy Sharman is showing me. She's the Green Roofs and Walls Project Officer with the City of Sydney Council.
We are standing in the Bay Street depot of City of Sydney Council, and like every other local council depot probably in the world, it's not very attractive. It's there's big brick buildings, there's really, apart from this one green wall, not a skerrick of greenery anywhere. Lots of bitumen trucks and rainwater tanks and street sweepers. We're right in the middle of Glebe, so we're right in the middle of Sydney, and you can hear the traffic in the background, so we're surrounded by busy roads. And we're standing in front of a green wall that was offered to the depot staff because it was a leftover from a trial we were running, and they jumped at the chance. The maintenance guys, the plumbers, I honestly gave them a jigsaw. I gave them this thing that we'd taken down. It was completely in pieces, and said to the guys, could you turn this into a green wall? And they have. It's a bit like Meccano, I guess, but they've done a fantastic job, and it was interesting. I was talking to one of the staff yesterday who looks after it, and she said it just makes a smile every time she walks past it in the morning. It's, yeah, something a bit different.
Before we go any further, what is a green wall?
That's a very good question. There's lots of definitions, and they can be anything from sticking a plant in the ground and growing a vine up it, so a passion fruit, for example. That's that also is considered vertical greening. Or you can have these really extensive kind of felt matting that's attached to the wall, and you can get some really huge panels on the side of buildings that are green walls. Probably one of the most common ones is the one we're in front of, which is just really buckets of dirt attached to the wall. It really doesn't matter if you've got a really beautiful, expensive art piece of growing plants, or you've just put something in the ground and grown it up. As far as I'm concerned, if it's got chlorophyll in it, it's a green wall.
What can you tell me about the history of Green Walls?
That it's very long and ancient, certainly in the northern hemisphere, so hundreds and hundreds of years ago. In Scandinavian countries, the only insulation they had was dirt, so that was effectively a green roof. And then in Australia, we actually have a reasonably long history, given our very short European history here. So the 20s, 1920s, 1930s, Art Deco buildings were put in that had rooftop gardens as well. So it was kind of our first foray into high density living, and there was an acknowledgement that we still needed to have greenery even then. So we've still got existing examples of green roofs from the 1930s, which is great. One of the things that every city's struggling with is this huge influx of residents into cities. That I think it was 2008, more than half of the world's population now live in cities. And so we're kind of struggling with this huge influx, lots of apartments going up, and we're really trying to look at all the space we've got. Is there some better way for us to use that space? Whereas I think previously it was aesthetically beautiful, so that's why it was done. It looked great. I mean, they still do look great, but we've got other reasons for putting them in now as well.
We'll get to more detail on the reasons for putting in the plant facades in a minute. But first, let me introduce you to someone else who's been thinking about greening the city. His name is Jock Gammon, and he believes that green walls and roofs are so much a part of the future of our cities that he's gone out on a limb, as such, and started a whole business based around urban greening. I met him at a new development site right in the centre of Sydney. The highest green walls in the world are on these buildings, and his company, Junglefy, is responsible for them. At the moment, there are two residential towers, one short and one tall. Around the base of each window and balcony, there's a line of planters with shrubbery and vines reaching up the building. There's also large, flat sections of green wall. It literally looks as if someone has taken the garden bed and flipped it up so it sticks to the side of the building. The majority of the plants are going well, given that the building was only constructed months ago. We took a lift to get up to one of the roof gardens so we could take a closer look at the plants.
29th floor.
Yeah, I'm a horticulturalist, come from the landscaping background. I originally came from accounting and commerce, but hated that with a passion and wanted to find a way out of it, and found landscaping and gardening was something that I love. I used to do it a lot when I was a kid. Mum dragged us out in the weekend mornings to clean up after her, and I think that's how I got into gardening, and I've loved it ever since.
And, you know, 7, 8, 9 years ago when you started seeing these green walls around, what did you sniff? What made you interested?
I think for me it was the beauty of them, and then also as the green building started to become more and more relevant, obviously a lot of people moving into the cities, we need to find better ways of making nicer buildings, and we definitely saw green walls as an instrumental part of green building going forwards.
So tell me about the engineering behind a green wall, because these are immense vertical structures. What's behind there, behind those plants?
I mean, the scale of One Central Park is unlike any others in the world. It's actually the highest green wall in the world, and at time of design it was the largest at 1,200 square metres, but that's just unfortunately been eclipsed by a project in Singapore at 5,000 square metres. So the One Central Park site is made up of two towers. The smaller tower is 17 floors and the larger tower is 32 floors.
This development, called Central Park in Sydney, is a little different than the majority of green walls, and not just because of its scale, but because the developers made a conscious decision to include the green walls in the plans from the start. They got Patrick Blanc, a French horticulturalist and green wall expert, to design the gardens. He's been responsible for the design of many of the more famous and large-scale green walls around the world. I got Jock to describe the Blanc method of constructing a green wall.
It's in effect a PVC backing, and then it has two layers of felt which are stapled onto the front of that. Normally his construction would be the whole structure would be built, then you would go through, roll out the fabric, staple that on and make it one homogeneous green wall. We had to do it very differently. We had to build, as every floor went up, we had to put the framework in with the felt attached to it, with the irrigation, with the planting design and layout attached to it, and put it all together like a jigsaw puzzle. All together on the project, both buildings, there were 176 panels that needed to be joined up, laced in with each other, and to make it into one continual green wall.
So when choosing plants in general for a project such as this, what sort of things are you going for?
Plants that can handle the windy conditions, ones that aren't too large in their growth and habit, something with firmer stems because we don't want soft herbaceous things breaking off in the wind, plants that are relatively resistant to pests and diseases, and plants that share similar water requirements because the control of the irrigation and water delivery is again homogeneous over the green wall.
The gardens start over 100 metres up and cascade down to the footpath. Jock just said then that they were the highest vertical gardens in the world, but who's actually tending them? Andrew Wands is. He's originally from the UK, and now he's the garden maintenance manager at the Central Park Development.
It's my responsibility to look after the living landscape here, basically, so me and my team just have to work together to make sure everything's thriving and doing well. There's a variety of plants from native to non-native species, and they've been picked specifically for this site, really, so they're all a bit different, and there's various sizes of them. So we've got a couple of panels that are small, maybe 5 metres wide by just two floors. They're about the smallest, and they vary up to bigger sizes, maybe up to 15 floors. So the larger and maybe twice as wide, maybe 10 metres wide. So big, large swathes of plants with varying species depending on the heights of them. It's quite a lush area, and everything is supposed to be full and green almost instantly. So everything's quite heavily planted, and we want it to look good within the next year, really.
As a horticulturalist, as someone who's clearly worked in landscaping and gardening for a long time, how is it different gardening down the side of a building in a vertical sphere instead of horizontal?
It looks very different, doesn't it? And everyone asks the same question, but I think in general it's very similar to other aspects of gardening. So the pruning of the plants, the care of the plants, it's all the same. They always want the same thing. So yeah, as long as you provide them with water and nutrients and some stability to be able to get their roots into, then I think it's actually very similar to other types of gardening, except here you're hanging 30 floors in the air sometimes. So, yeah.
In fact, everyone involved in green walls says that it's just like normal gardening, but they've all got green thumbs. My problem in trying to keep any plant alive is getting the water balance right. Too much, the plants die. Too little, the plants die. And a lot of my plants just die. And in green walls, where the soil load is very, very small, getting the moisture level right consistently is paramount.
In the basement of the building, centrally located, there is four large pumps. So two of the pumps do the east and the west tower, is what they're called, and then two of the other pumps do the planter boxes on the east and the west tower. So they're very large pumps, and each of the green walls has, I think it's an irrigation dripper, every 4 metres. At the top, there's the drippers are 20 gallons an hour, and then slightly further down, they're 12 litres an hour. So we have good control over getting a consistent wetting.
Yeah, and so that felt acts as sort of like a wick, does it?
Yeah, so it's a hydrophilic fabric, so it actually the moisture moves through it very, very nicely, and that actually then it has nutrients in the water, and those nutrients in the water work their way down through the felt, and it comes on 5 times a day, is what we've currently got it set at.
Yeah, so we're standing in the irrigation room, which is in basement one, and yeah. This controls all the irrigation for the whole tower, for the east and the west tower, the green walls and the planter beds.
It does look a little complex.
Oh, when you first come in, everything looks complicated, so yeah. But it breaks down to relatively simple components, so yeah, it can look complicated, but in reality it's not as bad as it looks.
That's the heartbeat of the garden. It's one of the four pumps which is pushing the water right up above our heads to trickle down through the green walls and baskets. Even though Sydney's a relatively humid climate, without the almost constant watering, a garden of this size, depth and style wouldn't survive. In saying that, this building complex uses 100% recycled water from the apartments within it to keep the gardens looking lush. Meanwhile, on the outer skin of the buildings, the plants are settling into their new surroundings. The buildings front onto Broadway, one of Sydney's main drags. The footpath is squeezed between an eight-lane road and the buildings, with plants gamely holding on at street level. The buses and trucks go by so close, you can literally feel yourself being sucked in and out of their draft. Andrew Wands and I had a close look at one of the street-level vertical gardens.
We have little microclimates and little bits of ecology going on. So we've some of them are weeds, which we don't want, but then we've also got some nice mosses some lichens and some liverworts, and we've got little ferns growing on here as well. So they're all things that we like to encourage, and they can grow on the understory underneath the plants like they would in nature, really.
So what plants are we standing next to here? What have we got?
So we've got some begonias here on the left there, and they're a bit more upright. They've got some red leaves with a bit of silver in there. They're next to some columnias, which are going to trail a bit more, so you've got a bit of variety in the shape of foliage, and some hydrocotyl, geranifolia below those, in a little patch, a triangle. They're more of a creeping variety, really. As you can tell, with geranifolia, it's quite like a geranium leaf. So they'll come out, and then they've got a little whitey pink flower down the bottom there.
When you look upwards, what do you see?
I see a big lot of green, various heights, various forms and patterns. I also see the good things and the bad things. So I probably see more bad than most, but I think this wall looks pretty good. It's one of my favourites. So, yeah.
That's funny, because when I look up, I, not being a gardener, don't see the bad things at all. I see the sun coming through the green leaves, and the green leaves rippling in the wind, sort of a little bit of wild in the city.
Undoubtedly. It definitely brings some nature to the city, and I think that's what everyone likes from this. So I think everyone needs it as well. A bit of open space, a bit of green, a little bit of nature.
You're listening to Off Track on Radio National. My name's Anne Jones, and today I'm standing right in the middle of Sydney. In fact, I'm in the middle of a council depot. I'm surrounded by concrete and brick buildings. There's tin all around me, galvanised iron. There's stacks of bins, all sorts of things that you would associate with the metropolitan environment. But on one side of me is a beautiful green wall. It's about 4 metres long by about 2 metres high, and it's just jam-packed full of plants of all different sorts, edible and otherwise. With me here at the Council Depot is Lucy Sharman, who's the Senior Project Officer of Green Roofs and Walls with the City of Sydney. Lucy, how does it make you feel standing here next to this green wall?
I love it. It's great. Maybe it's a bit twee, but it makes me smile going past things like this where it's so lush and green and in amongst, you know, pretty inhospitable depot, really.
Do you think that these green walls might have a chance also to become really community-driven?
Yeah, absolutely, and particularly around food growing. I think finding spaces for people to be able to grow food, and I guess, I mean, this is a great example. This is put up by a whole bunch of different people at council, but a whole bunch of different people look after it. You walk straight past it to go into the office, and you know, there's a couple of people that have got more green thumbs than others, but it's it's a lot of different people looking after it and making sure it's okay. And you know, Tamsin in there has put in some mint. She's getting some strawberries to go in. She's promised the guys that put it up that she'll make them some strawberry jam, so it's very communal.
That's quite a harvest. You need for strawberry jam. I don't know if that's a bit ambitious.
Ambitious. It could be. Definitely could be. But, you know, there's plenty of space on the wall. So at the moment, the plants are doing pretty well. So she's not going to pull these ones out unless she needs to. But, yeah, strawberries do really well on green walls.
So we're hearing that both the City Council and developers are very interested in the possibility of greening the walls of the city. But why exactly? What are the benefits?
Lots, which is one of the beautiful things about green roofs and walls. So they slow the stormwater down. So we are going to end up with more extreme weather events. We're going to get more flooding, hotter temperatures. it is already happening, it's going to keep happening, but a green roof will slow flood events, slow stormwater. They clean the air, we have got problems with air pollution. They are a great place for encouraging biodiversity, which is really important and really tricky in cities.
And that's just not biodiversity in plants, as you might generally expect, is it? There's other little animals and critters that come.
Yep, absolutely. And in fact, so we're standing here in front of the green wall and there's some honeybees with nice little leg sacks full of pollen, which is beautiful. So we've had, there's some research done in South Australia. Graham Hopkins, Christine Goodwin did some great research, and they'd only had their green roof plots up there for a little while, and they had bees and birds up there 22 stories up really quickly. So the critters will find them. If we're looking at how do we help them find those spaces as well.
Like make a little path almost.
Well, yeah, what we're looking at is, can we get, if we've got a big open green space like Centennial Park, can we actually, by having kind of stepping stones on roofs, help animals find their way through the city and have those kind of green corridors? But we're in the early stages of figuring that out.
Having plants on the roof and the wall also acts as temperature control, both as insulation for the insides of the building and for outside the building to counteract what is known as the urban heat island effect. Jock Gammon.
Urban heat island effect is the heat that from the sun that's radiated down on the city, and it's the heat that's actually trapped during the day on concrete structures. So during the day, the roads will absorb a lot of heat, and that heat is actually then released at night, which never allows the city to cool down properly. So it creates a heat island. By incorporating green roofs more so, but green walls to an extent, and street trees, there's the ability to reduce all the concrete structures heating up and thereby allowing the nighttime temperatures to cool down.
So you can almost feel the difference when you're next to plants, can't you, in the temperature? Just
definitely,
even
yeah.
Standing where we are now, which is actually on a roof surrounded by rooftop garden.
Sure. And it's again, that you can feel the difference, but it's also just the feeling of walking by not a concrete wall or a glass structure, but plants. There's a term called biophilia, which is people's innate sort of attraction to plants, and to bring that indoors, there's been a lot of studies and tests that show reduced absenteeism and increased productivity. One particular client we have, they're a call centre and they have a high staff turnover, and the cost to train up new staff is very expensive, so they've invested in green walls and games, breakout areas, so just things to try and retain the staff. And green walls they saw as one of the big drivers in that.
There's a lot of stuff around, say, community gardening and depression or people with mental health issues. The tricky thing is trying to actually prove that this one green wall will have an impact on people's health and well-being. And it's definitely, instinctively, I feel better. Lots of people feel better being around greenery, and you can see it. You know, there's a big wall down at Bligh Street. It's the middle of the CBD. On a sunny day, people are just kind of standing there talking to each other, and they'll back up against the wall, and you can see them wanting to get closer to it, and it appears to be completely unconscious. So instinctively, I'm very confident that these actually make you feel better. Getting some solid evidence that says, and it's solid economic evidence to say, you put $100,000 green roof on in a building, you will get X kind of dollars return in terms of mental and physical health and well-being.
But is this just the latest fashion in horticulture, or is it future-proofing the metropolis? Here's Lucy Sharman again from the City of Sydney Council.
We're looking at every available way of greening the city. So yes, you could put a big tree up, you'll get better carbon sequestration, for example, than a green roof, but you get other benefits from green roofs and walls that you don't get from big trees as well. So I guess we're really trying to diversify. I think one of the interesting things that we're looking at is, you know, say 30 or 40 years ago, we had a few species of street trees, that's all we had. Now, with really hot days, some of those trees just won't cope, and so we're trying to diversify our plant species, the types of trees, the types of plants, so that when there are more extreme weather events, we actually can manage that, so you don't lose half of your street trees, for example.
The green walls in public and private hands right across the city are playing a part in making Sydney a more enjoyable and sustainable place to live. And right at the end of the interview, I got down to business. I had the chance to ask a burning question of Andrew. He spends his working days hanging off the side of a 32-storey building in a sort of reverse cherry picker, tending to plants.
Are you scared of heights?
Yes, I was, yeah. I think a lot of people start this job and are very nervous at the beginning, and I don't think you can exactly say how you're going to react until you're actually out there. So,
but do you occasionally, you know, you're on your platform and you look around and think, oh dear, I'm actually 30 floors above Broadway?
Oh, not it's becoming almost routine now. But there are times at the beginning when you you take a step back and your foot catches something and you jump and you hold on to the edge. You get a fright and you give yourself a fright occasionally. But that happens less and less as time goes on.
What do you think? Does greenery on the street have an effect on your mood? And would it calm you down enough to soothe 30 floors of vertigo? Well, tell me by leaving a comment at our website. Find it by following the prompts at abc.net.au/radionational. I've also put up some photos of the gardens in the program and some links to research on the topic of green walls for you to check out if you're interested in finding out more. Thank you to Andrew Wands, Jock Gammon and Lucy Sharman for sharing their gardening tips today. It's been lovely taking a stroll through the garden with you, and I'll take you somewhere else next week.